get started. Today we have our two final lectures for the Free Radical School this year. Kyle L. Rahman, is going to be, will be first, followed by Carl White, who's going to do our case study. And luckily, since we hit the 100th lecture benchmark, neither will be subjected to any dorky introductions. And I appreciate Bruce being such a good sport about yesterday. So all that said, I think let's just go ahead and get started because Rahman's under some time constraints.
Thank you, Ed. Well, it's always a pleasure to be here and a privilege to be here at this podium. Rakesh asked me to talk about evaluating the role of superoxide and hydrogen peroxide in cell signaling. And it was a great title, and one of these days somebody has got to do it. But I told him, you know, but without, if you don't know exactly how to detect superoxide and hydrogen peroxide or any of these reactive oxygen and nitrogen species in cells, we probably won't get too far on discussing their role in cell signaling. So I changed the topic to evaluating superoxide and hydrogen peroxide detection methods in cells. And a chemist's view. This, about 2 years ago, Roger Chen was interviewed by Journal of Cell Biology, and Roger had these things to say. So there is no hidden meaning in this one, but I thought it was cute. And, of course, Bruce Freeman probably has a similar saying, but that's unprintable. Being able to do any chemistry was like being ... I know what Bruce would say. If any of you send me what Bruce would say, and if it comes close to what I think Bruce would say, I'll send $100, okay? So the lot of people, this is the most important slide. Michael Hardy, Joy Joseph, Marcos, and all of these people are involved in synthesis. And again, Olivier, and there are other people who are all important. And Hangtao Zhao was a graduate student who did most of the work. And Jacek Zielanka is with me now, and he probably knows more about this than anyone else. And again, Adam, he's just started, but I'll briefly touch upon his work. So this, I came up with it. But I'm going to give you an example with hydroethidine, but anybody who start to use these fluorescent probes, they all have to do something similar to that in order to be, in order to understand what's going on. First, the chemical reaction between the fluorescent probe and the oxidants should be discussed and studied. And then, of course, the redox reactions of the fluorescent probe-derived radical, because these fluorescent probe-derived radicals are not inert, and they can generate superoxide and hydrogen peroxide, so you need to worry about that. Again, the cellular uptake and of these probes, that's important, because we need to know that. And we are finding out that the oxidative damage or oxidative stress in the cell modulate the uptake of these dyes, and that's bad, but then you need to worry about it. That means you need to measure these dyes. Then the intracellular levels of the reductants, like GSH, that's also will modulate the fluorescence. And translocation of the fluorescent products in cells, that's another important aspect. Most of these products are cationic products, and they are taken up by mitochondria. So even though the oxidants are not formed in mitochondria, you may think that the mitochondria is the site of production. And lastly, most people, when they just do these experiments, including me, the red fluorescence or the green fluorescence was abrogated by apocyanine, so it must be superoxide derived from NADPH oxidase, or it's MNT-BAP inhibitable, so it must be superoxide, or even N-acetylcysteine inhibitable, so it must be some superoxide, something like that. And this is as if we know everything about apocyanine. Apocyanine is a nice mess, and nobody knows anything about apocyanine. And MNT-BAP, it's a lot of problems with that, and a lot of people have discovered it, and we have discovered it recently, especially for fluorescent detection. And N-acetylcysteine, you cannot say enough about that molecule. It's a good molecule with a bad rap. So what we wanted to study is this hydroethidine reaction with superoxide forming ethidium. And this has been, for decades, people thought that superoxide reacts with hydroethidine, forms ethidium as red fluorescence. And these experiments were done on a kinetic mode and using one wavelength that's corresponding to ethidium. So it was thought that when you get red fluorescence, that's due to the superoxide. And so we wanted to look at it, so I told my graduate students, let's see this, find out more about this reaction, because we wanted to find out about the rate constants and all that. Because this reaction, in my opinion, remained a black box. And the next slide, of course, Rakesh Patel has captured my sentiments on that and actually showed you a black box in your reproduction. And but this is what it is. We looked at xanthine oxidase system. This is in a fluorometer. Simple experiment. See what are the fluorescent changes that happens when you just introduce hydroethidine and in the presence of xanthine oxidase. And what he, after 30 minutes, he saw was the absorption that is indicated by this yellow color. And this, what is shown in the red is the, due to ethidium. So it's this is the authentic ethidium, and this is a product that's formed from xanthine oxidase-derived oxidant. And clearly, it meant that xanthine oxidase-derived product is not the same as ethidium. So this raised the question whether superoxide reacts with hydroethidine to form ethidium. And he used several different superoxide-generating systems, xanthine oxidase, and potassium superoxide, DMSO, and crown ether, and BH4-depleted ENA system. So he used all three of them and see whether he sees the similar type of fluorescent-derived products. So what's shown here are the fluorescent changes. And, of course, here the fluorescent quantum yield is enhanced because we introduced DNA in this one, because we wanted to make sure that if it was ethidium, then ethidium intercalates into DNA. And we wanted to see whether the product also intercalates into DNA. And it looks like as a function of time, the product goes up, and that's again clearly different from ethidium. And in the presence of SOD, this product that's formed from xanthine oxidase, HE, is completely inhibited, suggesting that what you are seeing here is derived from superoxide. And again, the whole thing was done in the presence of catalase, and this product formation was unaffected, clearly showing that this product is not derived from hydrogen peroxide, it is derived from superoxide. God, I'm getting so good at this mouse, you know, and I'm glad I'm technically far superior than Bruce Freeman. This potassium superoxide, and it's just, what happened? Okay, yeah. It comes, okay. So this is here, the potassium superoxide derived signal, and here ethidium. So again, it's SOD inevitable. And so even in this system, we see that superoxide forms with HE, a different product from ethidium. And you can separate this xanthine-xanthine oxidase superoxide-derived product, and that's what, this is a pure product. Clearly, you can see that it's completely different from ethidium. So the take-home message is here, a superoxide reacts with HE to form a product that's completely different from ethidium. So the next question is whether we can separate these products, and that's what's shown here. What's here is HE, and this is the ethidium, and here is xanthine-xanthine oxidase HE in the presence of ethidium. So you get this one peak, new peak here, and this is an expanded scale here. So this is the ethidium, this is the xanthine-xanthine oxidase superoxide-generated reaction product with the HE. So these products can be separated. And the next question is, what is the molecular weight of this? And this is the product, HE superoxide, and this is the ethidium. Clearly, there is a molecular weight 16 unit different, suggesting that this product, superoxide HE product, has got an oxygen atom that's incorporated into ethidium. So in one of the first papers, we suggested this to be oxyethidium. Later on, in collaboration with folks at NIH, we did a lot of MSMS and NMR and showed that this is a hydroxylated product, and there are two hydroxylated product, and this mouse sucks. Okay. All right. I think it's time to euthanize this mouse. Okay. So this is the hydroxylated product, and so we call this one as 2-hydroxyethidium. So HE superoxide gives a product that is 2-hydroxyethidium. And then next we wanted to show whether it is formed in the cells. And this is one of the old experiments, a menadione treatment with BACE, and then later on treated with HE. And as you can see, there are, with increasing concentration of menadione, it's an increasing red fluorescence. And we then extracted these products and looked at the HPLC. And this is what is shown here. This is the control. And this is in the presence of increasing concentration of menadione treatment. And as you can see, that this 2-hydroxyethidium product goes up. And again, at that time, like everyone else, we did with MNTBAP to show that it was due to superoxide, but it showed inhibition. But again, there are lots of problems with this kind of experiments, and I'll discuss it a little bit later. But what is the take-home message here is, in the cell, you can separate the superoxide HE-derived product. And, of course, you also form some ethidium. And that's an important message here. There is an oxidation product of HE in addition to the specific product of superoxide HE. And there is you got to do the calibration, and this is, even though the ethidium peak is very small, but as you can see, it is a standard. The concentration of ethidium is much higher, even though the peak was small. And so using doing all these standard calibration experiment, you can quantitate the 2-hydroxyethidium that's formed in the cell in response to menadione treatment. Note that in addition to this 2-hydroxyethidium, there's also a considerable amount of ethidium that's formed. And the red fluorescence was attributed to superoxide derived ethidium, and we know that superoxide doesn't form ethidium in the presence of HE. So we still don't know exactly how ethidium is formed. It's an oxidation product, and we don't know exactly what is the oxidant that is responsible for the HE conversion to E+. But you need to contend with the fact that there are two products that are formed. Both of them have a similar kind of fluorescence. So we thought, well, there is some way we can salvage these fluorescence, because everybody wants to use fluorescence because that's the easy way to do things. And confocal, flow cytometry, and all of these things. So we thought, well, perhaps we can use a certain region using filters and be able to separate the product 2-hydroxyethidium from ethidium. But as it turned out, I think Jeanette did a lot of work with that, and it just was simply not possible because the sensitivity was not there. And so the problem is, because of the overlapping fluorescent spectra from 2OH, E+, and E+, the red fluorescent from HE cannot be used to quantitate intracellular superoxide. Again, you can use the HPLC fluorescent assay, and because to our knowledge to date, the 2-hydroxyethidium is only formed from superoxide HE. But what we need to also bear in mind is other oxidants do react with HE but do not form 2-hydroxyethidium. On the one hand, it may be really a delightful kind of a finding, but the problem is we need to worry about the HE reaction with the other oxidants, because the trapping of superoxide by HE will be affected by the reaction between HE and other oxidants. So there are additional problems we need to contend with. And again, intracellular formation of 2OH is a diagnostic marker product. And these are some of these experiments. We wanted to develop new additional technological detection, and the new electrochemical detection methods, you know, it's actually much nicer, you know, and you can look at, there's an order of magnitude increased sensitivity between fluorescence and the electrochemical detection. So you can now detect these compounds in nanomolar concentrations, but the beautiful thing about it, you can actually look at these hydroethidine and ethidium and 2-hydroxyethidium all in one shot. And this gives you additional capability to interpret your findings a little bit better. And also, you can detect some additional products, such as this dimeric product from HE. And these are all oxidation products that are only mediated by radicals. And this is very similar to dityrosine, let's say. And you can look at this HE dimer, HE E+, E+, E+. These are all markers of oxidation events in the cell. And these products are not fluorescent for some reason. And we thought, well, this is how it's actually formed. You know, we just gave the way it's, this, in addition to this hydroxylation, you can form these dimeric products. And again, with superoxide, the caveat here is the initiating agent may be another oxidant. Once a radical is formed, that can react with superoxide to form the 2-hydroxylated product. And the most important thing is, as Fedorovich has shown before, the HE dot radical doesn't react with oxygen to form superoxide. Finally, there is some good thing. Well, we wanted to find out why this dimer is not fluorescent, so we did some semi-empirical calculations, you know, and found out that these dimeric molecules are actually about, this molecule is about 70 to 80 degree tilted from this one. So essentially abrogating the fluorescence, they are not planar molecules, and that's one of the reasons, you know, they are not fluorescent. And that's also one of the reasons they don't intercalate into DNA like ethidium and dihydroxyethidium. Okay, so once you know the chemistry of the HE, it became very, very clear that the mitochondrially targeted HE, that is the mitosox, and these experiments initially they were done in by Christian Robinson in Joe Beckman's lab, and they found out that superoxide from in mitochondria react with these mitosox or mito HE, forming the 2-hydroxylated product, and but doesn't form this analogous mitoethidium. So it's again gives you a power to detect this superoxide generation in mitochondria. And of course, you know, in the PNAS paper, they were trying to push the fluorescent method, and Joe was using, or Christian was using, a little window of opportunity in the fluorescent spectra, and claim that they can detect these super mitochondrial superoxide using fluorescence. But not all of us are Joe Beckman, okay? I mean, he knows a lot about this kind of thing, and in his system, he knows really what was going on. And I wouldn't suggest using fluorescence to do this kind of conclusions. He can do it. So this, again, as we saw with HE, mito-HE, again, you can use this HPLC fluorescence, mitoethidium, and mito-2-hydroxyethidium. So it's easy. It's child's play. Once you know the chemistry of this fluorescent molecule in a simple system, everything becomes easy. So the conclusion here is HE and these mitochondria-targeted analogs react with superoxide to form hydroxylated product that can be easily identified using HPLC technique. And again, prospects for visualization of these products using fluorescence are not very good, and because of the oxidation chemistry of HE and also mito-HE. And there are lots of other things that we have written about it in Nature reviews and Nature protocols, and again, there's a methods paper that's coming out in FRBM. So there is hope for superoxide detection in cells, but you need to do a lot of different things. You need to worry about the uptake of these dyes. You need to worry about the other products. So if you know a lot of these things, then it becomes easier to understand what's going on. And again, another probe is dichloro DCF probe. This is for this has been used for H2O2, and clearly, this is again a fluorometer experiment. This is DCFH plus H2O2 in the presence of some micromolar iron. So H2O2 doesn't react with DCFH to form DCF fluorescence. So you cannot measure H2O2 intracellularly using this technique. But you can look at the peroxidase activity in a cell and ion catalyzed reactions. So again, the problem here is DCF-derived radical undergoes all sorts of reactions. So it's a little bit more problematic with this one. So I wouldn't suggest using DCF fluorescence to measure hydrogen peroxide inside the cell. So, in fact, measurement of hydrogen peroxide inside the cell is a critical thing, and we don't have a probe. Recently, Chang and co-workers have developed a probe, and they claimed, this is a nice, interesting molecule, by the way, they claimed that with H2O2, it forms a green fluorescence, and with other oxidants, these green fluorescence is not formed. So they claimed that this is the kind of reaction, and this is the fluorescein molecule that's released from this reaction. And there were a lot of papers that came from the lab. So we wanted to find out what's going on. Unfortunately, as with everything else, you know, there are some problems, but We just went back and simplified our thinking and got compounds like this, and we're now working on it. And in my opinion, these are some fascinating molecules, and we may be on our way to looking at these reactive oxygen and nitrogen species in a different way. And we've got some exciting data, and I think we're going to have some cool findings, and it's at a very infant stage. But again, I want to stress the fact that they cannot be used to measure H2O2 alone, and like it was suggested by Chang and co-workers, and there are other things that's going on. But there are some interesting things going on. So the future will future work should be directed more at these compounds. And these are some publications. You may look at it. And so, you know, using different probes, you may detect superoxide, hydroxyl radical, H2O2, and all that. So you may think that if it's a duck, it looks like a duck. You may think that it is hydroxyl radical because that's what you're hoping. And it may even walk like a duck. It may even quack like a duck. So you think what you got is a duck, but then it may turn out to be a turkey. Thank you.
If anybody has any quacky questions they want to ask, we've got time for a few before Robin has to run.
Hi, I'm Natanya Spencer from the University of Iowa. I'm very curious to know if you have found out whether 2-hydroxyethidine is membrane permeable like DHE, or if it's membrane impermeable like ethidium.
HE is permeable. And this is all localized in the cells. So 2-hydroxyethidium is possibly is formed in cytosolic. And HE is membrane permeable, and it is 2-hydroxyethidium should be membrane permeable.
Hi, Skip Smith, Seattle.
Did you like it or not? Okay.
Where is it you live? While we're quoting chemists and such things, there's this dude named Werner Heisenberg, I think, who said you can't interact with a system without changing it. And so I think even if you work out the yields of ethidium oxidation and all sorts of dyes and traps, you're still changing the system when you introduce a pharmacological agent of that sort. People have to remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you're just using about, this is all about 1 to 5 micromolar concentrations of the dye. And if that is going to be changing the system, well, you need to just worry about it, okay? But they are, you can, with the electrochemical detection, you can go down in the concentration of these dyes.
Raman, that was very interesting. I was curious about one aspect of this we don't often think about is that once, and I'm looking at the structures, it made me think about it. What about the distribution of the product? Our presumption is that the product, once it's made, stays where it was made. But if you make H+, does that get sequestered, for example, into the mitochondria? And what about some of the other products? Do they start to actually relocate once they're made?
Yeah, we have to look at it. We haven't looked at the HE derived product, you know, whether the ethidium, this is in the cytosolic, this is a cell lysate, you know, and then we just look at the extract and all those things. But we have to see whether it even translocate to mitochondria. I would imagine that it will probably translocate to mitochondria. And but in the case of these, you know, again, whether we want to make sure whether we can detect some of these things in the cytosol. All of these fractionating experiments have not been done.
And I noticed that the H plus adduct, as well as the 2-hydroxy adduct, seem to track each other. And I wondered whether you had any thoughts about where that product is actually. It seemed to be oxidant dependent.
Yeah.
Where is it? Have you any ideas what that might be?
Well, we have done a lot of work with the peroxynitrite oxidizes Hg to solely to ethidium, and hydroxyl radical also does the same thing, but not to the same extent as peroxynitrite. So we were actually thinking that perhaps ethidium can be used, you know, as a marker for peroxynitrite and things like that, but we just thought maybe other oxidants doing the same thing. Okay, so we don't know what exactly oxidizes Hg to ethidium.
Right.
It could be a peroxidase activity and lots of different things.
Two more quick questions, please.
I think about mitosox, my impression was that you were polite, if not to say diplomatic. So I think in the spirit of Thanksgiving, you have to come clean. Should we use it or not?
Yeah, I think you can. A lot of these probes, you know, you can use it if you are empowered with
hand waving,
knowledge.
You know.
Okay, no, it's not hand waving. You know, it's, you can do it. But the problem with the mitosox is, Jacek, you know, that we have written in these reviews, it's not very easy to extract from cells. You know, because they are cationic compounds, they bind to a lot of proteins, and so the extraction yield is a lot less than you would think. So a lot of those extractions have not been worked out. So that's a problem with mitosox. But I would imagine that this has got you need to work with that. And clearly, when you see the 2-hydroxylated product, it is a marker for superoxide. There's no question about it. But you need to figure out ways to extracted and things like that, because these mitosox compounds, even if they bind to the pipettes, and because they are just cationic compounds. So all of these things are in the review. So yes, you can work with these, and you can make some useful interpretations.
Sergei Rykov, Emory University. It's a great validation. Unfortunately, not everybody is still following that hydroxyethidium is a specific product of superoxide. But in a sense, I'm wondering how much it's quantitatively reflects superoxide production because of formation of this dehydroethidium radical. So can you comment how much this initial step can be a problem for quantification? There has been lately reports that, for example, catalase and basically hydrogen peroxide scavenging may affect the yield of 2-hydroxyethidium, maybe because peroxidases also involved in the production of this hydroxyethidium radical.
No, I don't believe any of those papers. No. I mean, they're just we have done a lot of those things, and they are all SOD sensitive. So I don't believe those papers which says peroxidase activity generates 2-hydroxyethidium.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't make clear. I'm referring to possible peroxidase-like reaction to produce He dot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Beckman raised that point, you know, in that PNAS paper. Yes. Yeah. But you will still be detecting superoxide because the first oxidant will be generating the radical. So the stoichiometry and all those things, you know, well, we are now in the stage of looking at superoxide inside the cell, and it's not quantitative and things like that. But irrespective of the fact how the He dot radical is formed, the product is formed from superoxide.